Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Hey, I hope your weekend went well. Hope it was a nice, relaxing weekend. You know, these summer weekends, we only got a couple left. And then school is back in season and everything else is going to start happening. So let's slow it down and have some fun and enjoy the rest of the summer. All right. Let's see. A dad in Melbourne takes his son to the wildlife park. And apparently he was trying to feed a kangaroo and the kangaroo decked him. Apparently an emu was walking between the two of them as he was reaching out to feed the kangaroo. And the dad said, you should have fed the emu first. To me, I would feed the animal that's capable of punching me. That's what I would do. And a century-old fruitcake was discovered in Antarctica. They said it's almost edible. That's according to a New Zealand-based Antarctica Heritage Trust, the group that recovered the cake from Camp Adare down on the southernmost continent. The British-made treat was found in a rusty tin that's believed to date to Robert Falcon Scott's Terra Nova expedition between 1910 and 1913. Researchers said the cake looked and smelled okay, but they actually didn't take a bite. Cowards. Total cowards. All right, here's something very interesting. This eclipse that's coming up, there's a Facebook post of an eclipse party. And this woman, this mom from Dallas said, oh, I can't make it that day. Can you reschedule it? Nah, not really. Only happens about once every 100 years. Probably can't do it. Can't do it. Sorry. All right. We're going to take a little break. Then we've got Dr. Alan Noble, professor, columnist, cultural analyst on the studio line already. We're going to pick his brain. So we'll be back in a minute, 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us.
To save his life, call his wife and nothing to say, but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay. Going to work, don't wanna go, feeling low down. Heading for home, you start. Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on?
Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. I have on our studio line Dr. Alan Noble. He's an assistant professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University and the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the web magazine Christ and Pop Culture. He's a founding member of Public Faith, an initiative to present the Christian voice for the common good. Alan's writing has appeared in The Atlantic, Vox, First Things, Christianity Today, and the Gospel Coalition. That's a very nice resume. Good morning, Dr. Noble.
Good morning.
So,
thanks for having me.
So glad you could join us. I am interested to get your perspective on the top of the mind news story, which is, of course, what went on in Charlottesville. And, of course, I do want to say that we have great concern about Heather Heyer, the poor woman that got mowed down in that accident. And there was a gathering last night at the crash site to pay tribute to her. And my heart's broken that young woman lost her life and the family's grieving.
That's right. And I don't remember what the latest numbers are on those injured. Last I heard it was like 19 or something. So, you know, it's one death and many seriously injured, as you can imagine. If you saw any of those videos, it was horrific. Violence. So you can imagine it's, you know, her life and her family's life and a lot of other people who are, you know, seriously injured and traumatized. Horrifying.
Alan, I'm uniquely unqualified to comment on the mental twistedness of this young man who was in the car that mowed down these protesters. But I did read a little bit about him, and he's obviously a 20-year-old kid. His father died, I think, when his mom was pregnant with him. He was raised by a paraplegic grandmother. Certainly, you know, child like that is searching for an authority figure, someone that has some power and some control. And I mean, sadly, he drifted into being interested in Hitler.
Yeah, you know, I think especially young men can have a proclivity towards radicalization under certain circumstances. You know, if they don't have hope for themselves, if they feel that they were underprivileged, not given opportunities, if they don't have strong authority figures, like you're saying, they become listless. And, you know, in the modern world where there's not much of a sense of honor or adventure or a meta-narrative, something to give your life meaning and purpose and direction, some people are going to be attracted to things, to meta-narratives that are evil, just because they feel like that can give their lives purpose. Mm. And so for young men like him, white nationalism, this vision that the world is a fallen, it's a corrupt place because of other ethnicities coming into our country, and we need to separate. It gives a narrative arc, and he feels like he's fighting against this larger evil, and you can just get sucked into it. And this is one of the dangers of the internet too, is that you have what a sociologist, Peter Berger, calls plausibility structures, where groups of people, an internet community that makes this idea seem plausible. You know, okay, maybe America is fallen because of other races. We need to get these people out. And you have people, you know, encouraging that so that, you know, he gets to the point where he can see this is plausible. And it's, you know, horrifying.
Yeah, I was hearing a former history teacher of this gentleman, I think his name is James, saying that he's really an awfully nice kid. He didn't hang out with the drug crowd, and he was polite and respectful, and then he ends up at age 20 years old doing something like this. And of course, it's really hard to dictate the evils of the human heart, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I mean that's part of it. I think it's important to think in the terms I've just described, where you're thinking about the sort of sociological forces that help shape someone and radicalize someone. Mm-hmm. We do that when we talk about radicalization in Muslim communities. We should do that when we talk about it with white nationalist communities. But as we know, as believers, at the end of the day, a sin is driving this. And sin, in this case, the sin of hate, the sin of racism, is you know, what allows someone to be attracted and go down that road.
Mm-hmm. And then how are we doing as far as the response from the White House?
You know, I have not checked this morning, so I don't know if there's been any, you know, so often with this White House, mm-hmm. it's like 5 a.m. there might be an update. But as of last night, I've not seen an adequate response to this event and to the rally. It's a unique event in the sense that so many of the white nationalists at that rally saw themselves as marching as a part of the movement, in some sense headed by our president, mm-hmm. or they at least see our president as a hero of their cause. He's going to be the great savior who will keep the immigrants out, who will defend white people, who will get us out of foreign countries. And so you have people at this rally wearing his hats and doing chants about him, and you have David Duke saying, "We're here to fulfill Donald Trump's promises." And so that creates this really an ethical situation here, where these people who are marching for hate and are doing Nazi salutes and all these terrible things, carrying Nazi flags, at least claim to be representing the president. Now, of course, anyone can claim to be representing someone. That doesn't mean they actually are. But there's some implications. There's some implications to that. And so, especially after that, you know, what I would call, and what I think General McMaster's has called, a terrorist attack, you know, for the president to come out and say at the podium that he condemns the violence on many sides, and then, you know, watching the video, he looks up from his script and he looks at the cameras and emphasizes many sides, as if to say, the important thing I want you to take away from this is that there's this equivalent evil here, that these are, the problem is Antifa, which is this group of anti-fascists, also kids, also wanting to be part of a larger meta-narrative, who are willing to justify violence because they think, well, if it's against, quote-unquote, Nazis, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
He says, many sides. And that's deeply problematic, because when you have people marching in your name and promoting hate and committing an act of terrorism, you've got to be able to say, this is a unique evil. It's a sin, a historical sin of our country. This is bad. You can't say, well, all sides are in the wrong here.
Yeah, Alan, I appreciate your perspective. And I want to ask you also about if there's a better way to fight political correctness. You wrote an article for Christianity Today. I'd love for you to comment on it. 17 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Alan Noble is with us. Be back in a minute. Good morning, 19 minutes after the hour. I have on our studio line Dr. Alan Noble, first-time guest, absolutely delighted to have him. And Alan, you wrote an article for Christianity Today about, is there a better way to fight political correctness? Boy, it wasn't that long ago. Then President Obama said that marriage was between a man and a woman. He said that at Saddleback Church with Pastor Rick Warren. And now all of a sudden, if you say something other than that, you are bigoted and condemned.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there's this. It's amazing how rapidly our the popular cultural worldly social norms have changed, and it creates a difficult situation for Christians, because for those of us who are holding to traditional biblical values and sexual norms and sexual ethics. We can't just go along with what the world is doing. And so there's this movement. It's a particularly linguistic movement called political correctness. It's used for political means. It was a major part of this election. In the last segment, we talked about the rally. You could really describe that conflict as an example of the problems of political correctness and how it's and the difficulties it creates for society. So, for example, for many on the alt-right, they feel like they are revolting against political correctness. They mm-hmm. are told they can't make certain jokes, that they can't say certain things, and it feels like the entire society is oppressing them. And so their response is, and this is what I'm trying to get at in the article, their response is another kind of violent rebellion, which is to offend people. Well, if you say I can't say this word, then I'm going to say that word and this other word, which is even worse, and that'll teach you. And mm-hmm. by doing that, I'm fighting, I'm standing up for political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
It's also sort of the tactic that our president has used. And so, go ahead.
No, you please continue.
Yeah, so my argument is that I understand that, I want to say that I empathize with that initiative, because political correctness is restrictive. It is a kind of it can be a kind of violent or coercive use of speech, where you're saying you can't say certain things. And I understand it's a kind of gut reaction. You want to revolt against that. You want to say, no, you can't tell me what I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that what that response to political correctness, if that's how you want to fight it, all that you're doing is returning it with other coercive speech. All that you're doing is trying to use language to harm others yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Christian, that is, first of all, it's ineffective. You're not going to change things. And we saw that with that rally. I mean, that doesn't solve problems. It creates more problems. But as Christians, that's not an option for us. That's not appropriate. And so instead, what I argue is that we need to return to a sense of charity for the other. And we need to be concerned about others, not because we don't want to offend them, but because we love them. And I think that's a more important, more appropriate way to counter political correctness.
I think so, too. And I always want to look through the gospel lens. But if we take this political correctness conversation and move it into what happened at Google, maybe you would be willing to comment on that.
Yeah. So, I don't understand the work environment at Google entirely well. The impression I have is that emails like that, which are sent out broadly, are normal, are part of their sort of work culture of discussion. I'm not certain on that. In that case, the young man who wrote up these lists of reasons, he's trying to explain, okay, why does Google continue to have this disparity between men and women in their company? And he wants to argue, well, maybe it's not just because of discrimination, systemic sexism. Maybe part of it is that women on average are less interested in pursuing these kinds of jobs, or less interested in, or have fewer of these particular skills on average. And he repeatedly in his memo repeatedly says, I'm not saying this is all women. It is on average. And so he tries to create what I, believed after, going beyond the news reports and reading the memo itself. I think an important question, if we believe that our bodies matter, and as Christians we do, we believe in a resurrection, so we believe our bodies matter, it's plausible that, men and women have different, on average, skill sets. And I certainly know some women who would do very well in a tech company. But maybe having that conversation as part of a company is trying to, move towards equality, that seems like a pretty important discussion to have. And the response in public was unacceptable.
Yeah. Alan, I would love to continue this conversation. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, and being a first-time guest, I don't want to be impolite, but I would love to have you back and continue this conversation.
Thank you
so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yep, that's Dr. Alan Noble. We'll take a short break. It is 26 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us today.
Good day,
And there is sunshine. Loving it. We're going to take a little break for news, and then when we come back at 20 minutes until the top of the hour, we're going to speak to Dr. David Aikman on all kinds of foreign affairs. Be back in a minute.
I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good.
Good morning. 24 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, we've had a pretty heavy dose of conversation this morning about all the hatred going on in Charlottesville. So I figured let's take a little bit of a break here. And because it's Steve Martin's 72nd birthday today, let's hear his song called Atheists Don't Have No Songs.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Habaneguilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues. Romantics play Clair de Lune.
Clair de Lune.
Born again, sing He is risen. But no one ever wrote a tune.
Wrote a tune.
For godless existentialism.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Some folks sing
a Bach cantata.
Bach cantata.
Lutherans get Christmas trees. Atheist songs add up to nada.
Up to nada.
But they do have Sundays free.
Have Sundays free.
Happy birthday, Steve Martin. We'll take a break and come back with Dr. David Aikman.
Does your teenager feel valued and accepted at home? If not, they'll go looking somewhere else. Hey, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. As parents, we do a ton of stuff for our kids. We take care of their physical needs, we cart them around to school events, and give them things our parents never did for us. But all these efforts fall short of giving our kids the thing they crave the most: value, acceptance, and belonging. These are the virtues that build self-esteem. It gives them confidence to say no to temptation. They can find value from good grades or excelling in sports, but the only place a teen can find true value is at home. So, does your teen feel valued?
Is your teen driving you crazy at home this summer? Discover how all that extra time can be used to benefit both your teen and your family. Download Mark's 6 Ways to Make the Most of Summer with Your Teen at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Twenty minutes until the top of the hour. I love the fact that Dr. David Aikman does his own introduction, his own impression of James Bond. So nice to have him on the program. As always, good morning, David.
Good morning to you, Bill. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice. So yesterday on Fox News Sunday, the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, says that the North Koreans really continue to move closer to having an effective nuclear missile. Effective. Well, I don't even know what that means. What do you make of that?
Well, I think they mean it's been miniaturized and weaponized to be placed on an intercontinental ballistic missile that can reach the United States.
Okay, so the fact that he's got something viable now, are we pushing him to the point where he's going to back down, or do you think he is just crazy enough to keep pushing the other direction?
Well, we just don't know with Kim. I mean, there are so many factors which we're just not aware of. We don't know whether he is potentially suicidal. I mean, his generals certainly know that if he really pushed the buttons and tried to drop a bomb on the United States, even if the missile were shot down, the retaliation would result in the end of North Korea, the collapse of his regime, and almost certainly his death or captivity, whichever is worse. So how much does he operate by the rules of normal danger, and we just don't know.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about, when they say, well, he's not suicidal, I've heard that said a couple times. I don't know if I buy that. I think the guy will pretty much do anything. And I even wonder, he's 33 years old, I wonder what if he participates in any kind of mind-altering chemicals. I don't know what kind. He could be a drug addict for all we know.
Well, yes. I mean, that's absolutely true. We don't know whether he's high on weed or high on...
Who knows what he could be on?
High on anything.
Yeah.
So, well, we just have to assume that he may operate by the normal rules of rational discourse. And we have to hope that the Chinese have found somebody who can talk to him or somebody close to him and say, look, guys, this is not a comedy. If you do this, it's going to be the end, not just of your own country, but disastrously consequential for us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope the Chinese can say that with enough vigor that he'll understand it.
Yeah, so the fact the Chinese is throwing their weight behind this now, is that's a good thing, right?
It is a very good thing. And the Chinese have officially said that if he drops the bomb first, or if he attacks the United States first, and the U.S. retaliates against him by attacking North Korea, they will stand aloof. They will not participate.
Mm-hmm.
This is an extraordinary statement because, of course, you have to remember that they participated in the Korean War to such a disastrous effect that it took 3 years to come to a ceasefire after they had actually come into the war. So the fact that they are not going to participate in any response that he may be doing is a good sign for us.
Okay, let's talk about Venezuela. That continues to be a very fast-moving situation.
It does. And the statement by American officials that, or Trump's officials, that there might be a military option, I don't think reflects Trump's sort of decision to initiate an attack or an invasion of Venezuela, but I think it indicates that if the Venezuelan military participated in a coup against the regime there, that the United States would, if not as actively assist, would certainly tolerate that unconstitutional move as being in its interests.
Mm-hmm. David, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I've got several more questions for you. We'll take just a short break. Be back in just a minute with Dr. David Aikman. Good morning. 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. David Aikman is my guest, and we are talking about Venezuela right now. And he is Maduro. Is his support around the region is shrinking? The president from Peru is going, "Uh-oh, you're starting to lose us here."
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Well, Maduro really has, I think, taken two steps further even than Chavez would have taken.
Mm.
And he's basically turning his country quite specifically into a left-wing dictatorship in which all opposition will be in danger of being either killed or put into prison. And any of the normal human rights of a democratic society will be completely squelched. And he wants to put this particular regime on a pseudo-constitutional basis so that he can say to the world, look, we've passed laws, we've done this, we've done that, were operating constitutionally and the majority of the population voted for me, etc., etc. So he really wants to claim respectability for the regime that he's putting into place.
But it's really, it could be headed towards a civil war.
It could indeed, yes. I don't know whether it would go that far. I think there's a good chance that if the military is able to establish a successful coup, for example, much like Pinochet did in Chile over Salvador Allende, then you might be able to put in place a reconstructed democratic constituent republic that would function normally. But you'd have to make sure that all of the bugs were out of the woodwork in terms of supporters of the regime perhaps still operating within the police and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Aikman, I'd like you to comment about the war in Ukraine.
Right. Well, the reports are that the attack on Ukraine by separatists, either in Russian uniforms or separatists assisted by Russians, and of course we saw that the separatists used a Russian anti-aircraft missile to shoot down a Malaysian airliner a couple of years ago. All of this is going ahead, and Ukraine is absolutely forced to sort of really cling on to its nationalist identity and recruit volunteers to operate defenses and to actually volunteer as troops for the Ukrainian military. That part of it seems to be going quite well. But the question is, does the Ukrainian military, even fortified by zealous volunteers, have the equipment it needs to rebuff a solid Russian-backed invasion by separatists? And the answer is probably not.
Mm-hmm. And President Trump is, and the administration is actually considering arming Ukraine with lethal defense weaponisms. Are they not? That could help against Russian-backed separatists?
That's right. And of course, Ukraine has long wanted to be a candidate for NATO. And the test for the United States is whether its commitment to the independence of Eastern European countries, formerly under the control of the Soviet Union, will apply now, even though the Soviet Union doesn't exist and these countries have become independent, but Russia is getting very expansionist next door.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is whether President Trump can translate his a commitment in rhetoric that he's made over the last few weeks to support Ukrainian independence will translate into concrete efforts to help those countries defend themselves against Russian-inspired attempts to overthrow them.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Aikman, I'm always a little confused when I read headlines sometimes when I was reading about this acoustic attack. And I thought, how does that happen? Do they put someone on an international flight filled with crying babies?
Well, you might think you actually force passengers waiting for an airline to depart to sit listening to 1970s rock music all over again, or rap music.
Uh-huh.
That might be an acoustic attack. You're referring to what happened to the American diplomats.
Yes, I am.
Quite extraordinary. I don't know what went on. I mean, some kind of ultrasonic device that could affect and injure the eardrums of people subjected to the noise.
Mm-hmm.
That is very sinister, and that smacks of the KGB all together.
Does it ever?
I have to wonder if the Russians are not in some ways behind this operation, or at least Cubans trained by KGB apparatchiks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very disturbing to think that that could be an effective way of attacking. Just you can acoustically attack someone, and all of a sudden they're deaf.
Amazing. Yes, I mean this is very sinister, especially if something is going on beyond the range of their natural healing, so they don't even know it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least until the damage is done.
Yeah. Now, I'm really interested in getting an outside perspective, because I know I should tell our listeners you live in Ireland. So I'm interested in trying to get an outside perspective on some of the racial violence that happened here in the United States over the weekend in Charlottesville.
Right. Well, it's a very worrying, disturbing development. I mean, the fact that you could have people with swastika flags and white supremacist sort of jackboots marching into downtown Charlottesville and using the pretext of demonstrating against the removal of a Confederate general, General Lee,
mm-hmm.
his statue from the park, use that as a pretext for, you know, really well-prepared attacks upon opponents of that action. That's very sinister. That implies planning at a level that is deeper than we've seen before, even in the wake of the whole Trump presidency coming into office.
Mm, yeah. Well, it's what do the people in the UK think about this?
Well, I think they're just horrified.
Okay.
And I think they follow the lead of much of the American press in saying that President Trump was not sufficiently specific in criticizing the neo-Nazis and white supremacists, and his comment about hatred coming from all sides may technically be true, but in this case, everybody witnessed, I mean, a well-armed, well-equipped group of demonstrators really initiating tremendous violence, topped off by a car that drove into a crowd of counter-demonstrators. That's mm-hmm. a very sinister development.
Mm-hmm.
And the response this side of the Atlantic has been predictably horrified.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Aikman, I so appreciate your contribution to the show, but more than that, I just appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate being invited.
Yeah, thank you. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. It's 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a few to close out the show.
Today is the tomorrow that you promised yourself yesterday. So get it started right with the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Thanks for listening to the show this morning. We're so glad that you listen to Faith Radio and support it. You know that on this day in 1951, publisher William Randolph Hearst died at age 88. And, you know, he was a very avid art collector. He just was a very, very wealthy man. And I remember there was a story about him pursuing a vase he saw in a magazine. He called his curator and said, "I want to buy those vases." And the curator said he would get on it. He called him the next day and said, "Mr. Hearst, I've got good news and bad news for you. The bad news is those vases you want are not for sale. And the good news is you already owned them. They were in a warehouse in California." So I think that has something to do with we need to focus on what is ours in Christ. As we belong to Christ, we need to find out who we are in Christ and cling to that. And we need to study God's word so we can realize exactly who we are. Otherwise, you might be like Mr. Hearst. You don't know what you have because you don't know who you are in Christ. So maybe work on that today. And that wraps up the show. We've got a great show coming up tomorrow. So stay with us today and keep your station right here at Faith Radio. We've got Neil Stavem coming up at noon and Susie Larson at 3. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.